Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Everyone, welcome back to Nintendo Voice Chat. It's been a little while.
Like 3 weeks.
Yeah. 2 weeks.
Well,
2 weeks.
I mean, it's not entirely our fault. Because yeah. We recorded one that was actually very long with everybody.
It was pretty great, actually. We had Brian, Jack, and
we had the whole
us.
Crew, and it was very cool and very entertaining because at the time there was nothing to talk about, so it was
so we
more
sort of
a,
went crazy.
Yeah, it was more just chat about Nintendo stuff, but now it's just you and I, Audrey. And
yeah,
Rich.
We couldn't get anyone. Everyone's busy with GDC preparations and lots of stuff happening. So we still wanted to bring you guys a podcast, though. So it's just Rich and I here.
Yeah, sort of bad timing. Like the one good one we had with everybody died.
It
a horrible
died.
Death.
It was eaten by the computer.
Yeah,
and it was really sad. Yeah. So
it's not a conspiracy. Just in case you're wondering, I had a few tweets going, I saw a 16-minute podcast and then it's gone. What happened? It's like, well,
like, yeah, we'd actually posted it, and then I was gonna listen to it on my computer on the way home. I had to turn around and go back. I was like, damn, most of the podcast is gone.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're here. We're back, and we've actually got Nintendo news to talk about.
Yeah, quite a
it's
bit
wild.
Actually, fair amount. So.
The big one, obviously, is the Pokemon's.
Yep.
The Pokemon news. Pokemon Black 2 and White 2. looks like the Pokemon Company is actually foregoing the traditional third installment, the Pokemon Gray we've all been expecting, and instead they're going to do a sequel to Black and White on the DS.
Yeah, direct sequel, or presumably
we
a direct sequel to each one.
It's numbered two.
Yeah.
But,
and we know nothing about it, really, outside of we've seen two of the new, I guess they're legendary Pokemon.
Yeah, they look like new
Kyurems,
forms
is that
of
what they're
calling it? Kyurem? I don't know how you pronounce it.
K-Y-U-R-E-M, something
Kyurem,
like that.
Kyurem, yeah.
Something
but,
difficult.
But new forms of him, which... We made interesting observations about it.
There was a discussion in the office today about how Reshiram has seemingly lost his appendage.
His manhood. But we'll leave you folks to go Google that and discover
go
it for yourselves.
Go compare.
We don't have Brian on, so...
you know you have a weird job when you're talking about Pokemon dicks.
Exactly.
That was a weird one.
That about sums
and
up
And that followed
morning.
Audrey's discussion about whether Star Fox is a real... Or Fox McCloud is a real man.
I think we can all agree that he is. But that's another... discussion for got, another day.
That got treated too. That was awesome.
All these quotes being taken out of context. But anyway...
No, that was directly in context.
No, anyway.
And Mitch tweeted something about you talking
no,
about how
No, let's leave
smooth.
That one alone. Let's leave that one alone. No one go check your Twitter.
Everybody go read Twitter.
Anyway, right. So you actually put up a piece early today about it coming to DS over 3DS. It was really interesting.
Yeah, so I mean... It's coming out on DS, right? And so DS has been out for 8 years. Mm-hmm. 8 years.
And it already has two generations of Pokemon on it, which was already unprecedented.
151 million units sold for hardware over the three different iterations, or four, mm-hmm. I guess, four different iterations of the system. And, you know, there's no denying the system is a success, and there's no denying that it's a very viable platform for software. There are... a couple key problems with this, though, the biggest of which being that the 3DS, by the time this game comes out, especially once it comes out in all territories, the 3DS will have been out for, I think, over a year and a half by the time it, you know, presumably arrives, you know, what, September, October here.
Yeah, exactly.
Did we say the release dates? It's June in Japan.
Yeah, it's June in Japan and fall of this year here.
Yeah, same thing for Europe. So
exactly.
fall here, Europe.
It was interesting because Black and White already came, like, I don't remember, like a couple of weeks before the 3DS launched. So that was already sort of pushing it, but that was understandable at least because, like, no one had a 3DS yet. So.
Right. I mean, yeah, and it sort of made the point that, you know, but the original Black and White, like you just said, like it kind of made sense because in Japan it came out in September, mm-hmm. which was significantly far away from the late February launch of the 3DS in Japan. And so you say, okay, some translation efforts, blah, blah, blah.
And they'd already started working on it
exactly.
a long time before that. So
exactly.
that made sense. You could justify that.
And I seem to recall us even maybe asking Masuda-san, and he just said, you know, we really wanted to sort of give something else to the DS owners.
And they said they'd want to make it from the ground up if they made a 3DS one.
Exactly. And so. I mean, it totally makes sense. But then you have to sit here and go, okay, you made Black and White, you know, partly because it's a very viable platform, and you already have all your existing sort of systems and tech and graphics. Totally mm-hmm. makes sense. Now you're doing, you know, direct sequels, and I mean, I'm just calling it that without lack of knowledge of exactly what this thing is, but, you know, sort of direct sequels to these games. And, you know, I feel like they have a huge, there's a mountain of sort of a burden on them to prove that this is a worthwhile strategy because, you know, traditionally these third, or in this case, third and fourth pieces of a generation, you know, do very incremental upgrades.
Yeah, traditionally the point is just that if you didn't buy the first two, you can get Pokemon from both of those versions in this one, and they'll add, like, one new area or one new plot line or something like that.
It's more of just a, you know, kind of a cool stopgap, especially for the really dedicated fans or people who missed the first time around, and, you know, as you sort of wait for the next one. I mean, really, Pokemon is... largely, I think, become an annual franchise for the most part. Pretty close.
Yeah, if you include, like, the remakes and all of that, then
exactly.
Definitely.
Like, you're pretty close to, like, an annual installment. They're just pretty clever about how they do it, you know? And I think that the sort of so-called third entries for each of the core two have been very smart of them, actually, because, you know, it's a way to kind of repackage an existing game, but giving you some new goodies. And especially if you're really hooked on Pokemon, you're not going to pass that up.
Yeah, exactly.
But the problem is
throwing that out the window, and it's doing it in a really a different way, actually, because there's going to be two. It's going to be a sequel, we presume, obviously. We don't know anything about
it. The two seems to give it away,
but it
though.
Seems like it's going to be a direct sequel to Black and White rather than just sort of the same story with new Pokemon. So it's very interesting that that's coming to DS.
And, I mean, the fundamental problem of it is like, I think that it's disappointing to consumers.
Although, if you just read the comments of the news article, right. Almost all of them are, why not 3DS,
right.
Why DS?
And I mean, so and there's a few key things that stand out about this. And one is, from a business perspective, I think it's a bad move by Nintendo. The 3DS, like I said, it's going to been out here for a year and a half. And, you know, Nintendo struggled in 2011 with the 3DS. There's no denying that. And towards the very end of the year, starting with the price cut, and then a few months later, as Mario and all these games arrived.
Well, it's on fire now, but it had a rough start.
Exactly.
A
really rough start. That. Got its feet. You know, it's well documented. We've written about it plenty.
Yeah.
And, you know, between Mario and over in Japan, Monster Hunter and Mario Kart, and then this year, Resident Evil, Metal Gear, Tekken, all these things, it's finally really starting to gain steam. And over in Japan, it's been the number one system for, I think, ever since, like, late last year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's breaking records all over Japan.
Exactly.
But still, like, Pokemon, that's a system seller. That's one of their biggest franchises, if not their biggest franchise.
It is the game, I think, that makes Nintendo's portables work.
It does.
It is a very portable-minded game.
Well, it defines their portables in many ways. It's been around since the original Game Boy. It's been growing with the systems ever since then.
It is one of the reasons for their dominance. And had they had the foresight to figure out how to bring a Pokemon game in 2012 to the 3DS, when you combine that with Monster Hunter 3G...
That'd have been it.
When you combine that with Monster Hunter 4 and a new 2D Mario and whatever else... pretty good,
you know? It's pretty good.
And what I find just astonishing is that nobody, I guess, and again, this is just me sort of like observing, right? But nobody over there at Nintendo or Pokemon Company or Game Freak or anywhere around here said it makes sense for us to limit the potential user base of this thing and the potential sales of this thing for the future growth of this platform. And what better way to do it than to do some sort of sequel or Pokemon Gray-esque thing, you know, to grow it for the inevitable, let's call it Pokemon Shiny or something, you know, like whatever that really original Pokemon 3DS game is. I don't think anybody would have really faulted them for releasing a marginally upgraded Pokemon Black and White of some sort, optimized for 3DS. Like, could you imagine, like, you know, Pokemon Black and White 3DS, like, let's just call it that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, taking the same old 2D graphics, but kind of popping them out at you.
Well, that game sort of is begging for that treatment, because there's so, like, the bridge scenes and all of that, where it just sort of pops out. There's a little CG, like, that would have worked great.
And you know, you could pop it out a bit, and it's maybe old graphics, and maybe they're not quite taking advantage of the system's power, but you do it anyway, let that kind of be out there. And then the next one, you could really take advantage of it. And I'm just sitting here going, like, why?
Well, it's really funny because, like, it's weird that they're doing this now, because, I mean, the idea of a sequel to Black and White, like, just that idea alone, like, I'm really excited for that. It was a great game.
Curious
the story
idea.
Was sort of left open to more. So, like, that's a really cool idea to do instead of just the third entry. But it's a weird time to do it, because now is the perfect time for a third entry, because you could have done Gray. You could have made it for 3DS. Everyone would have understood. You could have seen the same areas, only popped out in 3D. Like, it's if any time is the time to do a Pokemon Gray, it would seem now.
Yeah,
so it's just kind of a funny decision. I see why they did it. Like, they could reuse old assets. Like, it's quick. Just give people their Pokemon fixed while they work on the bigger project for 3DS.
What frustrates me is that, so I see the logic in, you know, keeping it on DS. I mean, 151 million install base. And again, you know, when you say 151 install base, that's system sold. That's actually not like a realistic active user base. You know, a lot of people have picked up multiple iterations of the DS. That doesn't mean they're going to buy
them in, traded them
exactly.
Up,
And as 3DS has taken over, those are getting traded in. So it's not a realistic active user base. But Nintendo actually gave us a comment, basically. I'd finished writing the opinion piece, and just as a courtesy told them this is coming.
It was coming, yeah.
They didn't actually read it, but I just gave them, you know, I said it's talking about 3DS, DS, and sort of discussing why that's kind of a strange move to retain on DS. They asked if they could issue a comment. They didn't actually get to read the piece. They just asked if they could issue a comment on the general topic. This morning they gave me the response, and it was a sort of two-point response. One was, you know, yes, these are DS games, but they're still fully playable on the 3DS. So, you know, they still technically sort of in a weird way are part of the 3DS library. And second being that, like we've sort of been saying,
basically large install base, and they still want to bring
serve those customers,
DS people, yeah, yeah, new experiences,
and you know, all that's fine. I think that sort of the sort of asterisk next to the this is a DS game that can be played on the 3DS is the resolution's different.
It looks like shit on the 3DS. Yeah. It's like, I don't know if anyone hasn't tried to play a DS game on the 3DS, like you can do it, you get used to looking at it, but if you just play it as is, it's stretched out, it's blurry, it doesn't look very good.
Yeah, or if you play the resolution's different.
Or if you play it in the proper resolution by holding down the select and start button, I think is how you do it, and then it's tiny.
Right.
So there's just no good solution for that.
Yeah. So, I mean, technically it can.
You can technically, but you can't play it in all of its glory unless you held on to your DSi XL
or
something.
I could probably figure out a way. I don't even know if the hookups are right, but I could probably watch a VHS tape on my new HD TV. But
you don't want to.
Well, it's going to be interesting looking. So, you know, it's just a very interesting,
it's an interesting move.
It'll
be interesting to see how much it sells. Like, I mean, it's Pokemon. I'm sure it'll still sell fantastically well, but I wonder.
And I mean, Black and White.
I wonder if it'll suffer because of that.
And Black and White is the fastest selling Pokemon game.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's sold the most, but I know it's the fastest selling. And I believe it settled in, at least as of about a year ago, it was at around 11 million.
Yeah, yeah.
That's nothing to dismiss.
That's
and
a lot,
I think that's but again, it sold 11 million sort of on the sort of at the dawn of the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you're in a very different place. And I just, you know, I'm just sitting here going like, you know, for all of Nintendo's struggles last year, for everything that it's, you know, pushed to make right and fix, what are you doing? You know, and the other thing is like to argue about assets. And I mean, I totally understand a company, you know, needing to, I mean, I'm sure they're gearing up for whatever original 3DS game they're doing. I'm sure that's taking some resources. Obviously, you're probably going to have to redo a good chunk of your Pokemon.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think they're probably buying themselves time,
sort
of pushing back their schedule. They're going to do this, and then they're going to do the remake.
And these
then
are big
3DS,
games, too.
Because, like, I mean, it's no small feat. They're going to have to make fully CG models for all 600-plus Pokemon.
Here's the thing to keep in mind. They already did all the Black and White Pokemon in 3D. Because we have them
on
that
Pokédex
3D. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I sit there looking at that, and then I look at the fact that Capcom, inside of probably about a year and a half, made both Resident Evil Mercenaries and Resident Evil Revelations.
Those games are incredible.
They're visually stunning, take full advantage of everything the 3DS does. Granted, they are not the expansive RPG that Pokemon is.
True.
And I mean, Pokemon, for all of its simplicity and sort of how people like to sort of knock it for being, you know, repetitive on, you know, version to version, there is a lot of stuff in that game.
There's a lot of depth there if you look for it, and it's got a great foundation that it keeps building on.
Yeah,
so,
and like, it's always been very true to Nintendo's sensibility to have something that's very seemingly simple but very, very deep.
Exactly.
You go talk to anybody about, you know, sort of the complexities of breeding and raising your Pokemon, and you'll quickly cry.
Exactly.
I think ultimately, though, this is a missed opportunity. I mean, Nintendo could have really, and I mean, not. I mean, we can talk about this in a minute, but not that they really need to worry too much. But, you know, Nintendo, I don't think would or should turn away an opportunity to really seal the deal when it comes to like 3DS and the Vita market and stuff
And like the 3DS is doing, and we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
The 3DS is doing very well right now, but I mean, even if it was, like we talked about, just sort of a popped out version of Pokemon Black and White, that would have put so many people who are on the edge just over the edge. They would have gone out and buy the system.
And I mean, honesty would have worked in that situation had they said, maybe, you know, they could have been pretty honest and said, like, you know, we were developing this for the DS, realized that the timing would make sense to put this on the 3D, you know, put this over on the 3DS, something like that. And the other thing that I think is key is, and I'm just going to pull words right from Nintendo. I talked to Reggie last year in August about momentum and the fact that momentum is hard to get and it's hard to keep. You know, and once you have it, you have to do everything in your power to keep it. And that's, you know, and that's why they did the price cut. That's why Mario Kart, Monster Hunter got the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Their 2012 lineup is very strong. But why wouldn't you try and make sure that keeps going?
Put your big franchise on there.
You know, and there's nothing to be gained, really, in my mind, from releasing this on the DS. Yes, you have a huge install base. Yes, you know, so you can sell. Let's assume some knockoff, but let's assume like 8 million units or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. But in like 2 to 3 years, the DS will definitely not be there. Its sales have already plummeted. you're not trying to, you know, the purpose of releasing, especially first party software, and one of the big reasons is to grow your install base, mm-hmm. to make sure that future titles have even more things to do, which also lures in more third parties, mm-hmm. which, you know, it just kind of keeps, it's a sort of cycle that, you know, you keep going with. Yeah. And granted, they want to sell a lot of Pokemon games, and that mm-hmm. totally makes sense. The 3DS, though,
yeah, and like, it would be one thing if you could play DS games on the 3DS in good quality. Like, that would be more understandable. But true. Now, like, I mean, like Pokemon Black and White, those are really beautiful games. Like, they're sprite games. They're simple, but like, they're yeah. really great sprite work, very detailed. Sure. And
sprites look great on the 3DS,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, but if you play it all blurry and stretched out, like, it doesn't do it justice. And a lot of people are going to have to play it that way because they sold their systems to afford a 3DS yeah. at launch.
Sure. And I think that's the other thing, too, is like you have a lot of people who invested in 3DS looking forward to whatever the next Pokemon game was, mm-hmm. you know, and I think a fairly reasonable assumption over the past year has been, well, all right, Black and White came out, but whatever's next will be for the 3DS because yeah, that's exactly. now here. So it's very weird to me.
It's weird. Like, and to be very forthright, we're not saying it's going to be a bad game or anything. Sure. Like, we don't know anything about that. It could yeah. be mind-blowing, but it is a weird decision.
And here's the other thing. We really don't know anything about the game. Maybe there's a chance that it somehow, and I don't even know if this is technically feasible, so, mm-hmm. you know, who knows. Maybe there is somehow, you know, a way that it'll take advantage of the 3DS. I don't yeah. know. I mean, maybe they have yet to announce some sort of special thing in yeah. that capacity. I doubt it.
That doesn't
really make any sense. Hey, maybe they have something up their sleeve because, I mean, they have to. I mean, they got me the statement pretty
yeah,
quick.
They're aware.
So we'll see. I think it's unfortunate that this is going to happen, you
yeah.
know. I think it's a big missed opportunity for Nintendo, particularly given the fact that they finally got everything going properly.
Yeah. And speaking of Nintendo having things going properly yeah. versus other systems that don't have things going properly,
yeah, yeah.
the Vita launch.
Yeah, so stats came out today that worldwide, since it, you know, total, cumulative.
You've been making lots of friends on Twitter
yeah,
about this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll address that in a minute because I'm sure some of them are listening. So worldwide, the PlayStation Vita has sold 1.2.
I believe so.
Million
yeah.
units, and uh-huh. I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe that's correct. 1.2 million units, 2 million pieces of software, and by pieces I mean, according to the wording in the press release, digital and retail.
Like both of those, not just retail.
Right. And so what I did out of curiosity, because I was like, well, that, you know, and again, keep in mind, the Vita launched in like mid-late December mm-hmm. Of last year in Japan. And then launched about a week or so ago in Europe and America. So I went back and looked up some similar figures for the 3DS.
Mm-hmm. What did you find, Rich?
3DS launched, keep in mind, late February mm-hmm. in Japan. And then about a month or so later
in March
in America and again
worldwide,
in Europe.
Yeah.
Worldwide. And then I found stats that were about a week after that. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of looking at a somewhat similar metric in terms of worldwide. So you're looking at sales statistics for Vita and for 3DS that were available about a week after the hardware went complete worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
In the Vita's case, it was available for 2 months in Japan before, you know, the sales and being completely worldwide. And if in the 3DS case, it was about a month.
So if anything, it's giving a little more of an advantage to the Vita.
Vita, potentially. It's more time. Again, Japan is not the biggest market in the world, but it's still more time out in the marketplace. So, you know, you're looking at 1.2 million for Vita. You're looking at 3.6 for the 3DS.
Yeah. In the same amount of time frame.
Yeah. Give or take. Yeah. I mean,
roughly.
And the other thing you were looking at was, I want to say the software sales were 6.1 million for 3DS retail only because they didn't have eShop or anything like that at the time.
Yeah.
Plus, Nintendo
they
never
don't really
seems
count
to,
those for some reason.
They don't. I mean, they're not full. You can debate on whether they're full games or not.
Yeah.
But, and to my knowledge, Nintendo's never really broadcast those stats at all.
No, that would be interesting.
So, you know, it was kind of interesting. And I mean, I those of you who follow me on Twitter, I sort of just with a nice little sparkle in my eye and spring in my step, just sort of, I mean, I tweeted facts. Those are facts. And then sort of just amusingly sort of, you know, or with great amusement, defended some of the inevitable, like the Sony Defense Force that came after
me. It's incredible how defensive people are
about
this.
They're getting pretty bad.
Yeah. Which, I mean, like, I understand. We were in the same position a year ago.
Sure.
But, like, we were writing articles about, hey, 3DS, where's our games and stuff like that. But it's kind of funny to be on the other side of it now. Like, I was on a brief segment of Beyond the other week, and I'm getting like hate mail from Sony fans who are like, how could you say anything negative? Even though I wasn't even all that negative. I was just like, yeah, I didn't buy it at launch.
Yeah.
They should cut their price.
And I mean, so there's a few things that I would say just in general terms of the Vita. I've played some games. Nothing really grabs my attention at the moment. There's certainly nothing that would sit there where I'd sit down and be like, oh man, I need to buy this right now.
Yeah.
3DS wise, if this wasn't my job, by now I would have probably given in. Because when I'm faced with, you know, not only a remake of Ocarina of Time, but Super Mario 3D Land and Mario Kart and Resident Evil and Metal Gear.
And Icarus and all this stuff on the
And you
the
got
horizon.
The stuff on the horizon. Plus, you've got just a lot of little gems like Pushmo and stuff. That probably would have made me give in, even in the face of, assumed 3DS Lite somewhere down the line.
The thing is, the 3DS has done an amazing job. And it struggled at first. We covered the heck out of that. Yeah. But now it has found such a unique identity. It's really come into its own. And now it's just a really cool portable platform.
And also to be clear, like, nobody's really ever been sort of aggressively trying to say the Vita is going to be a huge success, though I have heard plenty about from fans and even editors and stuff about how, you know, America could be very different, you know, and that sort of thing. And, you know, not so much.
Yeah, that hasn't really turned out that way so much so far.
And I mean, someone else was trying to defend it by saying that the Vita launch lineup was better than the 3DS. And sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, neither of them were amazing, but yeah.
I mean, at least Vita had Uncharted, and I mean,
exactly.
I love Uncharted 2, not the biggest fan of Uncharted 3, and I messed with the Vita one for a little while and just didn't find it all that interesting. But that game alone is better than the 3DS launch lineup. You know, I mean, like, some of the 3DS lineup was fine. You know, Nintendogs is fine if you like that thing. Steel Diver was fine if you like that sort of thing. Street Fighter was pretty good.
If you bought a 3DS at launch, it wasn't because of their amazing launch lineup, because it was terrible. It was for the promise of all these games that you knew were in development.
Yep.
And granted, they took way too long to roll those out.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, there were months where I just didn't even touch my 3DS after I bought it.
And the other thing is, we'll see where things are in a year. You know, a lot of people are like, well, wait and just see what happens in a year. It's like, yeah,
it's like,
okay. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's...
It's PSP versus DS again. When the PSP was first announced, they're like, oh, it's going to kill the DS. It's going to sell way more. Yeah. Nintendo's going to be out of business. And then it didn't quite work out that way. Nintendo does portable gaming amazingly well.
It understands, I think, really well what's going on. And you know, there is a lot of stuff coming out coming. I think if I'm under the understanding correctly, Vita still is going to have somewhat of a drought coming up. Mm-hmm. Like, to my knowledge, there's nothing
coming up
huge
anytime soon.
Right.
Yeah.
But there is still the promise of, I believe, Call of Duty, some sort of Call of Duty is coming eventually.
Sometime this year. Call of Duty.
BioShock something. I believe those are both out there.
Mm-hmm.
From what other editors tell me, so don't go quoting me on that if I'm wrong. Yeah. But, you know, and that's really awesome, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, I would think that a price drop has to happen.
Yeah.
It just seems like the era of trying to do some sort of $250 portable is just not right.
It's just,
right there.
I mean, Nintendo found out the hard way that that's not going
to
fly.
And what was interesting to me, too, is that, you know, in the face of watching all this 3DS stuff happen, Sony sort of just went and did the same thing, thinking that its system was different and better. And I think they were trying to go for kind of a high end market, but maybe that's not quite, you know.
Well, it's like you could get a PS3 for that much and play those games on the big screen.
Yeah.
You know?
So I just, you know, and again, like, I have no interest in seeing the Vita fail. I mean, someone said, you know, competition's great, and yes, but I just don't, isn't really one.
We're not sitting here, like, going around sabotaging the Vita and hoping it fails. It's just, especially considering being on the Nintendo team the past year, like, it's just an interesting and a funny observation to make.
Exactly. You know? And I mean, I've had to listen to that shit all year. So
exactly.
and you know, and none of that is to say that Nintendo didn't screw up pretty severely for the first good chunk of 2011.
It's like that's part of being fair and unbiased, is whenever any of the companies screw up, you should take a moment to laugh at them. We pointed our finger at Nintendo for the better part of 2011, and now it's Sony's turn
to make observations. And it would be interesting to see, you know, what the Sony team here eventually makes of what's going on with Vita.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is going on? And, you know, maybe in the coming months, everything rights itself and they really start taking off.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting that, you know, at a similar, relatively similar time frame, to the best that we can get these figures and get solid figures, because it's not like companies give us stats every single day or anything like that. So within a reasonable similarity of time frames, you know, 3DS had done remarkably well. Mm-hmm. Now, the 3DS just after that, just its sales just dropped off the charts. So it would be interesting to see if, you know, in the coming months, the Vita just stays kind of steady, you know, and we'll see. But
it is true. Like, in a year, whatever the Vita is going to be or will be will sort of have been determined. And
I think so.
It'll be interesting to see where it all ends.
What was interesting, too, is I had a lot of people saying to me that the Vita is super powerful and has more long-term potential. And I had a few people saying that to me. And, you know, okay, power, you know, and again, like you said, PSP, DS. PSP was clearly the stronger of the two.
Oh, yeah.
And PSP did not fail. It just didn't capitalize how everyone expected it to.
No.
Everyone expected PSP to be what DS was and DS to be the other way.
Yeah.
And it didn't quite work out that way. And what's interesting to me is that everyone's just sort of assuming, well, this time it's going to be different. Could be. You know, and mistakes like, I think, mistakes like keeping Pokemon on DS when you need it on your 3DS, could cost you, you know,
and
could actually, you know, sacrifice what, you know, that momentum you need. So hard to say. And, you know, this is just the beginning and we'll see. And honestly, I don't really, you know, in some ways I don't really care. I think it's interesting.
Yeah,
at the end of the day, I like good games.
And, you know, like, if Vita becomes an awesome system that has 10 million amazing games on it, that's great. More fun to be had.
Yeah, and I mean, if you give me original games that really fit portables well, I mean, I made this remark about Metal Gear on 3DS, and we can get to that in a moment, but... you know, I like games that feel right for a portable. You know,
it's like Revelations. That could have been a console experience, but they tailor-made it for the portable with the episodes and the recaps. And they did a lot to make it feel like it belonged on the portable.
Yeah, and one of the trickiest parts about Metal Gear on the 3DS is you get into these spots where you have huge cutscenes and people talking for a long time, and the save structure isn't really accommodating, where you'll save in it. You know, you'll make some progress in sort of an area with killing some guards and stuff, and then you save, but you start over at the beginning of the area, things like that. You know, it doesn't quite account for the fact that you are actually in fact playing on a portable. And I kind of feel like I'm seeing a lot of games coming to Uncharted, and this is very generalized, that are trying to be console games on a portable.
Exactly.
That, to me, is not what I want from a portable, and I would rather just go play those games on my big-ass TV.
Especially Uncharted, where, like, the main hook of it, like, the gameplay in Uncharted isn't great. That's never what it's been known for. It's a really...
More an experience.
Yeah, it's a cinematic experience. That's what's so impressive about it. But why would you want to see a cinematic experience on this tiny little screen? Like, it's a beautiful screen, but it's tiny compared to... You can just play it on your... big television in your living room, and that's what it's made for.
And I mean, Metal Gear is a port, but I had fired up the PS3 HD collection of Metal Gear, and, you know, granted, you're looking at about a 10-year-old game, but
it's the same deal.
Strictly from a presentation point of view, I'm just like, wow, I'd rather play it on this. Now, there's some catches we'll get into, but, you know, it's a similar argument where it's like, do I really want Call of Duty on a portable? Probably not. And the funny thing is that I ride a train for 45 minutes each way back and forth from my place, because I live in San Francisco and use public transportation. So I'm kind of the ideal market for a portable. And, you know, but that's not what I want on my portable.
And another thing, especially for something like Call of Duty, is like those sticks on the Vita, they don't feel very good.
They hurt my hands.
They're not like the DualShock, which feels great in your hands. Like I don't like Call of Duty. I'm not a Call of Duty fan. But if I were going to play a shooter that I did like, I would want a real controller in my hand, not those sticks.
And, you know, what's funny is my observation about the circle pad, the circle pad has always been one of slight frustration. But then going from that and seeing kind of how more stick-like, you know, analog inputs function, actually am sort of I'm a little better. Yeah. And that's not to say that it, you know, I mean, the 3DS definitely needs two of them. Mm-hmm. Circle Pad Pro is kind of clunky, blah, blah, blah. But as far as
the feel of them alone, I actually came around on the Circle Pad.
So Vita's, you know, doing okay pretty early. We'll see what happens. Certainly not just blowing up the markets. I mean, we've seen that in Japan for months now, but, you know, we'll see. Maybe, who knows, maybe US will really start to take off. Although there are no games on the horizon that I'm aware of at the moment that are just like, that's the thing, you know.
Exactly.
We haven't seen any major franchise. I mean, we'll see what happens at E3. Yeah, I think E3 is actually going to be where we find out.
I imagine it'll be very Vita-centric. It almost has to be.
I think so. You know, but, I think it has to be.
And
so.
Again, like I'm always bringing this up, but like the PS3, people forget that took a long time to find its footing and to stop losing money.
And honestly,
we'll see.
All consoles, portable, home consoles,
that's
struggle
sort of
at launch.
That's the nature these days, especially in modern times where it costs so much to develop new technology.
It takes a while for people to understand it and really take advantage of it.
And see why they want to invest in it.
Yep.
So,
Actually, I mean, just as a side note, I wrote, and I think this has been since the last time we did a podcast, but I wrote an article just sort of analyzing a theoretical Wii U launch. Mm-hmm. And if Nintendo is able to convince the right amount of third parties to partake, if the third parties find it worthwhile and we get things like maybe Resident Evil, maybe, you know, we do know that some sort of Assassin's Creed is coming. What version? Who knows? Mm-hmm. But, you know, if we're starting to get games like that, say,
maybe
Activision, you know, sees the opportunity to put Call of Duty there, all these things. So who knows? But if some of these, you know, perennial and major franchises that are coming out this fall and also that come out every year, if all these things sort of line up and Nintendo's able to convince people to put this stuff on there, you could see one of the biggest launches of a console ever.
Yeah.
Just hands down ever.
Resident Evil, Arkham, Assassins.
Yeah, exactly.
It could be pretty big.
Like, if all those things line up, plus, and this is a big plus.
Yeah.
Some sort of Nintendo franchise, you know.
Mm-hmm. Something Mario.
Hypothetically, let's say Mario, you know. Yeah. Like, wow. You know, because, you know, typically at a Nintendo launch, you're lucky to get a Mario or a Zelda or something. Mm-hmm. Then you throw in some stuff like, because I think this generation has really given us some amazing franchises, some of which come out annually that are great experiences for a lot of people. And if those third parties see the value in bringing what they're already planning for 360 and PS3 over to Wii U, that could be pretty incredible. And if they don't, and this will be very interesting, if for some reason they don't, then Nintendo has like significant questions to answer about how it's able to appeal to third parties. Because if say Activision can't be bothered to take a 360 PS3 game like Call of Duty.
And move the HUD onto the controller.
Move it over. Yeah. If they can't be bothered to do that, or it's too technically difficult, or whatever.
Then that's a big problem for
Wii
U.
That's a huge problem. That's like, that's a significant problem. And it's the biggest question, I think.
It is. And it remains to be seen. We know nothing as to what the answer to that is.
Yeah. So, I mean, but I mean, just the potential of what Wii U could see this fall, just sort of from our vague knowledge of what is coming this fall, because I think a lot of release dates have yet to, like, where exactly is BioShock showing up? You know, we don't know things like that, but lots of potential. So anyway, that random Wii U note, because we have to talk about Wii U whenever we can or something. Anyway, what are we talking about next?
Now, last story is coming to America.
I think it's funny. We have this sheet in front of us that we're going through sort of checklist of items, and we're actually going backwards kind of, which is hilarious. So Nintendo held a conference, one of their Nintendo Direct presentations.
Mm-hmm. Which you can watch on your 3DS.
Woo!
Yeah.
This was, last week, right?
Yeah.
And they addressed a number of things, and we'll get to each of those items in due turn. But yeah, they finally confirmed that Last Story is coming. It's already out in Europe. Just came out last week. We've heard that it's probably based somewhat on the European localization, because why not?
Yeah.
But beyond that, we're not really sure what's going on. You know, we're still waiting for answers. I actually have questions into Xseed, and hopefully we can get them sometime soon. But you know, the first thing I did was like, interview, let's go. But I don't know when we'll get those answers.
Yeah, so that's the second of the big three of the Operation Rainfall games that are finally coming to America. Second of the big three.
Xenoblade is coming April 6th, I think. Mm. And that's actually being published by Nintendo. But yeah, beyond that, we don't know too much. And honestly, from all accounts, and I mean, I haven't played the game directly, but Pandora's Tower is far lesser in quality than compared to the other two.
Yeah, I honestly could see that one just not coming at
all. Right,
right. I mean, don't know if they think it'll appeal to American audiences.
Precisely. And I mean, the pecking order seems to work out that most people seem to acknowledge that Xenoblade is quite good. Mm-hmm. Last Story seems to be kind of good, some really good ideas. Visually, I think it looks more interesting than Xenoblade.
Yeah, but, I haven't played either, but just looking at them both, I'm more excited for The Last Story because I just think the visuals are amazing, the artwork's amazing, and it's Hironobu Sakaguchi.
Yeah,
so
sure.
That's promising.
I think we gave it, what, an 8.5 or something like that?
If that got an 8.5 and Xenoblade got a 9. But what a stupid Keza, though.
Was it a 9.5?
Was it 9.5?
I don't remember.
One of those.
I don't read our reviews. I mean, that's sort of the weird part about this game is, you know, UK or Europe in general has had Xenoblade since August of last year.
Yeah.
And Japan had it, you know, the summer before that or whatever. So, yeah, but anyway, it's cool that it's coming. Mm-hmm. I think Wii owners have another significant piece of content to play.
But yeah, and like we've said it before, but it's worth noting, guys, seriously, buy the game. You bitched and bitched and bitched. And if you don't buy the game, games like this will never, ever come again, no matter how many letters you write.
Yeah, I mean, here's...
So show support.
This is what the whole problem has come down to, is that Nintendo... And I think partly just from observing just who's buying Wii, they know, you know, they can figure this stuff out. Who owns a Wii? Who's, you know, what's the market for this right now?
Who's buying software?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure they're very aware that, you know, the core gamer software has dried up a bit. And so likely those gamers aren't tuned into Wii. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, if you guys don't buy games like this, and I know it sucks because they've been sort of dragging you guys around and not giving you answers. But if you guys don't support software like this, it's just going to further reinforce this whole problem.
Exactly. Like letters, fan sites, like they're all very nice, but it's the numbers that talk. And if they look at the end of the year at their sales figures and this did nothing, they're going to know for sure. Don't bring those games over, no matter how people beg for it, because they're not going to buy it.
Yeah. And it seems like at least in particular, Nintendo of America has become pretty cautious about what exactly it's bringing over here, particularly with Wii. It'll be interesting to see if that sort of practice continues or how that all manifests in sort of future generations. But they seem to be much more cautious about what software they're bringing over here. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to be fair, Xenoblade and Last Story are huge games
that
require a great deal of localization and production value and voice acting and all these things. So I can see why they'd be hesitant, particularly if they look at the Wii market trends and realize that most people are going over to 360 PS3 to play. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they do have a responsibility to support their consumer base.
Yeah.
At the same time, we have a responsibility to actually buy the damn game.
Yeah, so it's like, and I know games are expensive and it sucks, money's tight, but I mean, if you care about these games, go and buy them. You know, we were just talking about this earlier today with Fire Emblem 3DS.
Sure, sure.
Like, that hasn't been confirmed for America yet. And like, I'm a huge Fire Emblem fan. I'm freaking out over it, but... Yeah. I mean, I understand if they don't bring it because those games don't sell anything, and it sucks. Mm-hmm. So when those games do come, by God,
gotta support the games that you want. Yep.
Like it's not. It seems like a small deal, but really, it's just supporting the industry and showing them what you want.
Yep.
So yeah.
Random aside, this is sort of backtracking to the Pokemon thing. You guys have been seeing, probably, hopefully, on both the Wii site and 3DS site that we are doing a lot of blog questions. Mm-hmm. And by blog questions, I mean we ask you guys questions sort of in the context of some other stuff that's been going on to write blogs, give us longer form thoughts. Obviously, the comment threads are only so much, you know, so useful and they tend to turn into crazy rants and stuff like that. So we've been sort of asking those of you that are interested to write longer form blogs on MyIGN and then send us the links.
And we'll go and read as many of them as we can. Like, obviously, we get a lot of submissions, so we really read dozens and dozens of them, but we can't get to all of them.
Exactly. It's difficult for us to get to all of them. I spent a lot of time reading them last week.
We read a lot of them, so and, don't think there's a good chance yours will get read.
And we try and promote as many as we can.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a way for us to engage with the community. We have a really awesome Nintendo community here on IGN, and
we want it to be bigger.
Yeah, we want it to be bigger. We want wanted to get you guys, highlight your thoughts. You guys write some awesome blogs. You have some great thoughts. So we just want to sort of put you in the spotlight.
Yeah. And this week, and the article isn't written yet, so I got to kind of go do that. But it's going to be about Pokemon, you know, and letting you guys kind of articulate in greater detail what you think about this situation, you know, maybe some of the things you want to see from this version that would convince you, yeah, okay, I'll invest again in a DS game, even though I already own a 3DS and that's what I'm interested in, stuff like that. Yeah. So keep an eye out for that.
It's in code, though. It's just a bunch of Pikas.
Yeah, exactly.
You can figure it out.
That'll make that really easy.
Pikachu?
Oh, man, my article just got awesome and easy. So let's kind of go back to, you know, we were talking about last story. We mentioned that it was sort of in the context of a conference. Mm-hmm. So there were a few other announcements.
Yeah, Mario Tennis.
Yeah. So what's going on
getting
there?
Getting a release date.
Yep.
May 20th.
Yep.
You're going to be playing tennis with Mario.
Well done.
On your 3DS, yeah.
Yeah.
And
they revealed some more details, actually. So it's developed by Camelot, which is cool because they've been doing all of them.
Yeah, which is good because those are generally very good games.
They're good games. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're actually really good.
I don't care about tennis at all, but those are pretty fun games.
Yeah. And I believe they showcased some stuff where, you know, you're able to use the face buttons and whatnot, but there's also the touch screen is sort of like carved up into weird little like shapes that are for different types of hits and whatever you call tennis ball hits. I'm just gonna call them hits. Anyway, so
that's a technical term.
Yeah, I don't know like the intricacies of terminology for tennis, but so yeah, I mean the games are great; they're a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Also, there's going to be up to four players online as well as local play, so that's pretty awesome.
They're doing a pretty decent job of supporting online with the 3DS so far.
Yeah, it seemed like starting with Mario Kart, especially.
Yeah, that was
like,
the biggest
okay,
step
go.
For them. Yeah.
So, so we kind of know those basic details.
Game Gear games are still coming to 3DS because that's not news. They already announced that before it launched,
prior to what E3 or something.
Yeah,
right?
But now they've announced they're coming this summer.
Is this in March?
Is it March? I can remember March.
I don't
or
think
May.
We have North American.
Yeah, they're coming to Japan
yet.
Like March Very or May, soon. One of those M months.
Excellent.
So, I mean, that just means that they're actually getting around to doing it, which is nice. Hopefully, Game Boy Advance.
Yeah,
soon.
That would be cool.
Because, like, us ambassadors have been enjoying that for a while now, but everyone else. There's a lot of good games.
Let's see, what else did they announce? So over in Japan, they gave details on Fire Emblem, but as we mentioned, that hasn't been confirmed.
Please come. Okay, I'm okay now.
What else did we get?
Sega, Capcom, and Namco Bandai are teaming to make a mysterious 3D game of mystery.
Yeah, so something's coming to 3DS, we just don't know what it is. And
we've got our fingers crossed for Pac-Man, Mega Man, Sonic Bowling. Personally.
If it's like all of those guys go to the Olympics, I'm gonna be pissed.
All of them go to the London 2012 Olympics part two with water bottles.
It is really interesting. And I mean, Iwata is sort of, I don't know if he's been referring to this specific project, but he's sort of been hinting at the idea that, you know, they have some partnerships and they're working with outside partners. What kind of game would require all of those people together is interesting. I actually kind of hope it's not just a simple, like, mascot team-up.
Team-up thing.
But I don't know what it would be. That's weird.
It's really strange pairing all of those.
I mean, I wonder if Nintendo is, like, lending some of its mascots out to those folks. But with so many developers, it's hard to see or hard to say what that could possibly be.
Yeah, and then, it'll be interesting to see who's actually developing it.
Right. How do you have all three of those people developing?
Yeah,
that's sort of the big question.
Like, I mean, something I know, and then this is just something silly that probably means nothing confirmed, but on the website I saw that underneath all of the big three names, like it said Namco Bandai, so like that makes
Does that mean they're like a lead or something?
That's what I would tend to believe, but we don't know.
Yep.
I want Capcom, personally, but we'll
Capcom's
see.
Pretty solid. Let's see, what else we get? They confirmed, so the Xenoblade game has a flip cover where you can just sort of reverse it, and they confirmed the art that was coming to that.
The ones that people voted on.
Yeah, the voting one on Facebook, which we didn't cover either because that happened between this podcast and the previous one. The other thing that they discussed, and we can just talk about it because we've actually played it, is Kid Icarus.
Yeah, multiplayer. We had a big multiplayer demo recently.
Yeah, so they kind of did some broad sweeping kind of looks at it on the presentation and actually in the international versions. You had actually Masahiro Sakurai actually kind of narrating some gameplay, but so we got to play it. two basic modes that can be played online or locally.
Sort of a standard free-for-all where you just try and kill everyone as much as you can. Yeah. And then the more interesting mode is light versus dark, where you split into teams. There's six players. If you don't have enough players, the AI fills in. And there's six, three on each team. One's the light team, one's the dark team. And you sort of have to go after the other team and beat down their health meter. And when that finally gets down to zero, the last player who died turns into the team's angel. And then that angel is super powerful, but if you kill them, it's over. That person, that team loses.
Sort of converts from like traditional three-on-three to like a VIP mode, basically.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. And then some of the other things that sort of factor into that are if you're using more powerful weapons that are, you know, all your weapons based on their characteristics, their sort of special power, or not, they're not powers, but like bonuses
or whatever,
and stuff.
Yeah.
There's distinct powers that you can activate, but then all your weapons can potentially have special modifiers and that sort of thing. And there's infinite combinations of those. But based on that, based on their power, their long range and short range attack capabilities and all that, they're given a value, like 200 or 400 or whatever. And if I recall correctly, like something around like 260, 250, stuff like that, it was actually very powerful,
correctly. Yeah.
So that determines your health, basically. So when you die,
that's how much gets taken off of your team's health meter.
So if you have, you know, a more powerful weapon, you're sort of expected to be able to use it well and perform well.
If not, your team's going to be very mad at you.
Yeah, I mean, and it's actually a cool system, I felt, because, you know, we played a bunch of matches and I grabbed a really powerful weapon and it wasn't suited to me because there's many different classes of weapons and you kind of got to figure out which one sort of suits your preference in terms of combat, whether you want to get up close and really go at people from like right in their face, or if you want to stay at a distance and sort of shoot things at people.
And there's advantages and disadvantages to both tactics.
Yeah. And I mean, over time you sort of figure out what makes sense. You can also like you kind of outfit your people with like just sort of equipment and abilities, not necessarily powers, which are also equipable. But
there's a lot to this game, if you haven't noticed. The weapons alone, there's so much to that system. You can't really tell by watching the trailers, but there's a lot to it, a lot more than you'd think.
It's a ridiculously deep game. In a weird way, I think that actually, I mean, not only is it one of its greatest, you know, sort of strengths, but it actually is kind of a weakness
a little bit. Yeah.
Because there's just so much going on. But it is also very cool. I think, again, it sort of highlights, I think you and I both agree on this, that, you know, in the past for single player, we've said that there are some control and there are some camera issues. Yeah. And it almost gets reinforced when you're playing against live opponents. You can also have AI opponents in the multiplayer mode. But, you know, it gets reinforced because now all of a sudden you're dealing with, like, people that are very dynamic and real. And when you're trying to keep track of the camera and everything, get a little crazy.
Yeah, it sort of shows up. But what you were talking about, the weapon thing, is a really interesting way to sort of balance it.
Yeah.
So, like, someone who's not very good can just can't just grab a big weapon and go and kill everyone.
It actually forces you to know
the
game.
Yeah, so that's a really cool way to do that.
Yeah. So we, you know, expect more Kid Icarus stuff in the future. The game comes out March 23rd, so we've got about a month. But, you know, I was actually pretty impressed. I think the single player is pretty good.
It's funny because it's a game that a lot of us, for whatever reason, from what we've seen, what we'd played, we weren't really thinking too much about, we weren't too excited about. But now, as we're seeing more complete builds and all of that, it's actually shaping up more than we initially honestly thought it would.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's a little surprising, but then again, it's Sakurai, so you're kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
It's cool.
It's good to see it's coming together.
It's tricky. I think Nintendo is going to have a difficult time really, unless it really showcases the game greatly, and just really making people understand what this game's about.
Yeah, especially considering, like you said, how complex it is. Like, that's going to be hard to get across
to. You can't just show that off in a 30-second ad, you know?
No, exactly. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how they market it and how it does.
So a few other quick hits. Mario Party 9.
Yeah.
I
played it.
Uh-huh.
Mario was there. And
he partied.
Rolled dice and played
minigames.
Was he
just like chugging alcohol and stuff?
Oh, yeah. I'm not supposed to talk about that. Embargoes.
Yeah. So, you know, very similar to previous games in a broad level.
Yeah, I mean, like Sam was the one who's played all of them. I haven't played them in years. But, yeah, I mean, it's Mario Party. The big difference is that you're sort of on rails instead of on a more traditional board.
Mm-hmm.
So you're rolling the dice quite a bit. But, it's Mario Party.
Okay.
So,
and then and that comes out in about 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, that comes out very soon.
Park 2, very quick overview.
Yeah, Poke Park 2.
It's a Poke Park game.
Yeah, it's a Poke Park game. I mean, It's actually pretty well done for what it is. Like, really great character models for all the Pokemon.
Seemed much more at younger gamers.
It's very adorable, but it's definitely aimed at younger gamers, which isn't a bad thing. It's just like people who play games regularly or who are just older are probably not going to get much out of it. Like a little, very small kid is probably going to love the heck out of it, but it's very simplistic and repetitive gameplay. And so unless you just really badly want to see an adorable Pikachu rolling around on your screen, like there's probably not much reason for anyone to get it unless they have a little kid they want to play it with.
Cool.
Not an insult. It's what it is. It's what they wanted it to be.
I mentioned Metal Gear a bit earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, just to kind of touch upon it in just more of a dedicated segment. It's a really good game. You know, it is Metal Gear Solid 3. You know, it's about 8 years old. Back then it got rave reviews, got a subsistence version a year later, which kind of gave you full camera control and that sort of thing.
And this is from the subsistence version.
This is basically the subsistence version. No multiplayer or anything like that, but just, you know, very, very good. The upgrades are you know, depending on if you played the game before or whatnot, it's going to really make a big deal to you or not. So, you know, you're able to, like, aim with your shoulder buttons and stuff like that. And so, and what's weird about it is, like, you know, you within just a handful of months, you had two versions of this game come out. You had the HD collection and you had this version. The HD collection has Metal Gear Solid 2, MGS 3, and Peace Walker.
Around the same price.
That's the thing is, like, currently in stores, they're the same price. They're they're $40 each. So it's kind of weird to see, like, one that's a three-game bundle and the other one that's a one-game portable game. But what the weird part is so this one has, I would say, better controls. I messed around with, I mean, you know, I played through this one and then I messed around with the HD collection just to see what that was about. You're obviously dealing with better visuals and just a very, you know, gorgeous, crisp presentation of the game in the HD collection. It still looks pretty darn good despite being old. Then on the 3DS, you're dealing with limits of display because the screen's small. And there's only so much you can do about that. The 3D effect, though, is great. It looks pretty good for a 3DS game, actually, despite not being made for it. And it has better controls. You know, you use the touchscreen to access menus quicker, which is awesome, instead of, like, pause, scroll. Yeah. This, you're just like, tap, I need to access my camo.
And I think, the biggest plus of buying it for the 3DS, and, like, obviously, if you have a PS3, you probably want to consider getting the HD collection. But if you don't, it's still a really great game.
That's
and,
the thing.
Like, the visuals look great. The 3D looks really beautiful on it. And for me, the biggest plus was that the HUD is completely clear in the 3DS version. That's the only version that you can play it with, just completely. There's nothing on there because it's all on the bottom screen. So, like, that really does a lot for the cinematics and visuals of it.
I mean, they did some really, really cool stuff with it. There's still slowdown, which was sort of something that reared its head before. And, you know, I said the 3D effect's great. There's
some of it hasn't aged so well.
Yeah, exactly. There's a little bit of gyroscope implementation. And you're going to notice that the design of it is a little limited. You know, if you're used to something like Assassin's Creed, where you're kind of, you just run at a wall and you'll just hop up it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Metal Gear's a little different. And so in some cases, if like I remember there's one point where I was like sneaking around. And I was like, oh, man, I'm totally going to go to that boat right there. And I'm going to hide in the boat. And then when the dude walks by, I'm going to break his neck or whatever. And I ran over to the boat just at the right time because the dude, you know, couldn't see me or whatever. And he's doing his little patrol. And I hop into the boat and I'm like, all right, lay down. And he wouldn't. I couldn't get him to lay down. Yeah. I was like, why can't I not? The boat's right here. That's totally what this is meant for. Couldn't do it. And in a modern game, that would have totally been anticipated and it would be there. And in this one, he wouldn't do it. And that kind of sucked, you know, to kind of be like, I see, you know.
Yeah.
So there's some of that stuff. But it is one of the best Metal Gear games. I think it's arguable that it's, you know, up there with maybe Metal Gear Solid 1. I would definitely put it above, like, you know, 2 and 4, which are not bad games. They're just, you know, worse.
Out there.
They have monkeys drinking Coke and then that bastard Raiden.
Great games.
Great games.
Especially if you haven't played them before.
And then, like I mentioned before, you know, it's maybe not quite as designed for portable. I'm not going to play it on the bus because I don't know when I'm going to run into a 15-minute codec conversation.
Yeah.
And yeah, technically, I could just shut it. You know, cause someone was, I saw this complaint somewhere out there, like, ooh, you could just shut it as a sleep feature. How many of you have put your system on sleep and then come back to it and to realize it's dead? That happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
So don't tell me that the sleep feature is fantastic. You know, like that's not the answer to my problems. The answer to my problems is not playing it on a portable.
Yeah.
But again, game's great. If your sort of like living situation is that you are playing this mostly at home or whatever, cool. But again, if you're going to play it at home,
you probably,
and you have a PS3, you know, you sacrifice some stuff though. You lose some control. It's very interesting that you have two versions of the game, and it's arguable that they're kind of equal for their own strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very strange situation. But anyway, good game. And if you haven't played it, definitely, definitely think about that one. Good stuff.
Yep. So, yeah, that's
about it, right?
That's about it. You know, keep writing into us, nvc@ign.com.
Yeah,
we didn't really have time to, there was a lot of news we had to cover. We didn't really have time to get to reader questions today, but we'll start that back up again next week.
Yep.
So, you know, just email us, hit us up on Twitter, myign, and.
Just we address this in the podcast that we lost. We'll talk about it in the future. The whole formatting of whatever.
Yeah. We've listened. We've read your emails. Yeah. That you're very concerned about the audio.
There's no reason to be concerned in the sense that whatever we do will be for the benefit. Ultimately, it's just a matter of us trying to figure out what makes sense in this day and age. What makes sense for our time investment too.
Because like, as you can see, it's hard to get us all together do a traditional podcast.
It's hard to get us all together because this is sort of done on top of everything else we do.
It's sort of especially hard for us because like we pull in so many people from other teams.
Yeah,
it's hard
exactly.
to coordinate schedules.
Because you and I are the Nintendo
team. Nintendo
so this is very easy for us to do because we're just like, okay, let's do this for an hour.
Yeah.
But, you know, Goldfarb, for example, is on news. Sam is on guides.
Yeah,
Altano's
on
news and features.
Like,
Jack's on news and features. Pear's executive vice president or whatever. Fran does Fran type things.
Fran just doesn't exist.
Actually, we haven't seen Fran in months.
Out of reality.
Yeah. So, you know, it's difficult for us to get it all together. Plus, it's just like, if Sam has a guide to write for Mass Effect 3, that's what Sam's going
to
do.
That's his job.
You know, and Goldfarb is busy doing news things. So, point being, we're trying to find and think about formats that are the most entertaining for you guys in particular, that are still giving you guys cool things and cool ways to see us and sort of interact with us, but at the same time make sense for what we have to do. Because, to be honest, I'm going to write the Pokemon editorial and get Nintendo's comment before I'm going to do a podcast. And you know, for some of you that just like to listen to the podcast, that's sort of tricky. But I would beg of you to go and read IGN as well.
Yes, please
you
do.
Know? I mean, I know most of you guys do, but like, seriously, there's some good stuff there. And
like, we
have
to
focus there.
And like, we can go into more detail and depth on our articles than we can in a podcast. But
I mean,
there's still space for it. We're listening to all of you. We want to know what you think.
That's why we brought it up.
Exactly. I mean, let us know in the comments of this article what you think, what you'd want to see if there was sort of a format change. And obviously, you know, we listen to you. We care about you. Like, if we do something, but like, if we change something and you guys hate it, like, we're not gonna just keep doing it. So, we're just trying to evolve with you guys.
Yeah,
so,
and I mean,
we'll see what happens.
That's the thing is, like, you know, we're looking at a podcast that's fairly popular, but then I look at something like YouTube, you know, and I'm like watching dumb people attempt to cook things while drunk the other day, and like, that is the funniest thing. And you look at the views, and it's like 1.2 million views, you know, and that's really cool, you know, and I think, you know, and not that I'm sitting here obsessed with numbers, that's not accurate, but at the end of the day, you know, we want what we do to be read and seen and listened to by as many people as possible.
Exactly.
Because that's kind of what we're supposed to do.
And it's not
that's
at all about abandoning our audience. Like, we love our Koopalings. We love interacting with you guys. It's expanding it and making things more interesting for you guys, too.
Well, that's why we do things like Twitter. That's why we do the blog interaction and the questions. And that's why we go on myign. That's why we do the podcast in the first place.
So don't freak out. Like, things may change, but we're just going to be experimenting. And like we said, you know, let us know in the comments. Let us know in email what you think about all this, what you guys want to see or hear or whatever. So, that nvc@ign.com, and that about wraps it up for today.
Y'all.
Thanks for listening, Koopalings.
Later.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.